This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Shanning and Noel. Now, the race is on to secure one of the first five digital banking licenses in Malaysia. Media reports have suggested that Grab, Razer and AirAsia are among the non-finance companies exploring bids for a digital bank license.
In December, Bank Negara announced plans to issue up to five licenses to new online banks offering either conventional or Islamic banking. And this is under a proposed licensing framework, which is set to be finalised by the end of June. This year.
Yeah, digital banking, of course, is a growing trend across Asia. We saw Hong Kong starting first and then followed by Singapore. So more regulators are opening up banking to new digital players. And of course, this is driven by a boom in mobile connectivity and the prospect of tech companies offering low-cost financial services in the region.
So for some thoughts on who stands to gain or lose from digital banking in Malaysia, we have on the line with us Tama Febrian, Associate Director for Financial Institutions at Fitch Ratings. Thank you very much for joining us, Tama. Now, what's your assessment of the digital banking licensing framework here in Malaysia compared to others in the region?
Hi, yeah, so thanks for having me. So we see a lot of similarities between the digital banking license framework in Malaysia with that of Singapore, which was out last year as well. So beyond the number of licenses, which are capped at five in both the markets, both regulators seem to have taken the same approach in a way that they require these aspiring entrants to demonstrate passive profitability within 5 years of their inception. So we think this is quite an important factor, especially in the context where we've been hearing reports of a lot of these startups and emerging tech companies, which are likely applicants of these licenses, continue to demonstrate loss-making businesses over the years as they aggressively compete for market shares, raising questions over sustainability of their business models. Now, with this requirement, it is quite clear that BNM, as well as like MAS, do not want to have that same scenario to happen in the financial sector, where I think the stakes are so much higher. We believe that it should somewhat reduce the risk of this irrational pricing and value disruptive competition. So secondly, we also have seen that both regulators seems to have taken an approach that they wanted to cap within the foundational phase, but they wanted to cap the asset size of these digital banks. Let's say, for example, with BNM, 2 billion asset size cap, and MAS with a deposit cap that are progressively raised as the players get larger. But we also do note there are some differences, one of which they're quite pertinent is the endpoint capital funds requirement. BNM's endpoint capital requirement of 300 million for these new digital players is much lower than the MAS 1.5 billion, implying a lower barrier to entry. But does this necessarily mean that the competition will likely to be more intense in Malaysia? Perhaps not so. I mean, we've seen that because what we are seeing is that there's this cap, the number of cap, which is five, and as well as the asset and deposit sizes that I mentioned previously. So, yeah.
With digital banks in the market, who stands to gain or lose?
Well, right now it's a bit too early to tell, what will happen in the longer run. But definitely, if you're talking about near-term risks, we are currently monitoring how this could affect us on the incumbent bank's profitability. One of which that we're already seeing right now in the sector is that the competition is already intense as it is. So we have a lot, around 30 commercial banks and Islamic banks in combined vying for market shares. And this has put a lot of pressures on the bank's margins over the years. And especially in the context where growth prospect is quite relatively muted even in recent years as well. And as these new digital banks come into market, I think the competition is likely to heighten as they try to build their deposit share. So we've seen an example in Hong Kong, let's say the ZA Bank offering an interest rate that is two or three times higher than what the incumbent banks are offering. So I think when the same dynamic happens here, then I think the impact will probably a little bit be more pronounced for some of the smaller Malaysian banks, which have a little bit more modest franchises, because they're probably a little bit more at risk to such threat, as there will be more pressure to compete for pricing. Whereas for the larger banks, in our view, I think the degree of impact is probably a little bit less pronounced because, firstly, they have a much bigger and more established franchises, and they also have better resources to invest in IT. We know that some of the banks have been quite active in investing in their digital capabilities in recent years, which would make them better prepared to fend off some of these new competitions. But again, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, it's really early, too early to tell what will happen in the, let's say, for example, in the next 10 or 20 years, because as with technology innovation goes, you know, it can be quite rapid, and the competition can also become quite intense quite fast.
And do you see applications in Malaysia coming from non-traditional players only, like Grab or Razor, like what we saw in Singapore?
It's not necessarily the case, because we've seen that in other markets. Let's say in the case of Hong Kong, we've seen Standard Chartered Bank actually tying up with HKT, Hong Kong Telecommunication, and other players to create a consortium to create to secure the digital bank license. And we may see the same thing happen here in Malaysia, because we think that there's a business case there. So the incumbents could enhance their franchises through cross-selling and leveraging each partner's digital platforms. But I think in general, it's probably likely that the non-traditional players will likely dominate the application, as what we've seen in the case of Singapore.
And when you mentioned the incumbents, would there be more pressure actually on the smaller banks to then tie up with these non-traditional players to compete then?
Well, it's not exactly a clear-cut scenario. There may be some cases where the smaller banks think that, oh, okay, it's probably better for them to partner up with some of these players who have the digital capabilities to go and after some of the markets that they're targeting. But it's not exactly as clear cut. We probably will see a little bit more pressure, but it's not so clear cut from that angle.
So Tama, what's your gauge of the situation then here in Malaysia? Who do you think will be the likely successful candidates for the digital banking licenses?
Yeah, so I guess for this one as well, you know, if you look at the rationale that BNM has when they're trying to introduce the license, it's quite clear that they'd like to ensure that some of these new players are there to help serve the underserved and the unbanked segment in Malaysia. So it somewhat implies that they wanted to see some of the new players, which will have the capabilities to better serve these markets than some of the incumbents that we have in Malaysia already. So in this regard, we believe that there is a greater likelihood that some of the tech companies which have these advanced customer analytics and digital capabilities to probably secure the digital bank license, especially for those that have very strong financial resources or backing in the case of whether or not they go with a consortium, like in the case of Standard Chartered with Hong Kong Telecommunication, etc. So basically, in short, the likely pairs will be those that have the advanced digital capabilities and customer analytics with the strong financial resources, because some of the requirements that I mentioned earlier with regards to the fact that they need to demonstrate passive profitability within the next 5 years.
And thank you very much, Tama, for speaking to us this morning. That was Tama Febrian, Associate Director for Financial Institutions over at Fitch Ratings, talking to us about the digital banking licenses and the licensing framework that's been put out by Bank Negara. So he is of the opinion that tech companies will be the most likely recipient of these banking licenses, just by virtue of the fact that, as BNM has come out to say, that you know the whole point of these digital banking licenses is to get more people onto the banking bandwagon to help serve, as he put it, serve the underserved. It seems like they may be more geared towards non-traditional players rather than the traditional players who have so far not really managed to meet that market.
Well, the traditional players like Maybank and CIMB, they already have the app, right? The banking app. So maybe that's why they don't feel compelled to apply for to apply for a digital bank license, because they already have that digital platform. And then it's a question, how do they they will compete with the digital players. But really, I think what for me is also you need to level the playing field. Yes, you can give a digital bank license, but will the playing field, will it be fair between the digital bank and the traditional players? So, for example, money transfer platforms right now, digital money transfer platforms, for example, MoneyMatch, you know, in order to transfer money out, and I have a lot of experience that I actually have to send a document to prove why I just need to transfer like maybe 1,000 ringgit or 500 ringgit. Whereas like for a bank, a traditional bank, I don't have to give any documents. So, you know, it's very troublesome. And there's also a cap how much you can transfer out using a digital platform.
I think for you, Noel, because, you know, traditional banks know a lot about you. They have already done their KYC. They've already done the anti-money laundering.
But
so these new entrants have more to prove. But the point,
platforms.
The interesting thing will be, can you be profitable? You know, because you probably need to give out a lot of freebies to get the market share. So the question is, how soon can you be profitable is my big question.
Because, of course, it's at the end of the day all about the money. But right now we are, of course, heading into the 8 o'clock news. And then after that, we'll be having the Breakfast Grill where Wang Xiaoning speaks with Alex Yao, Group CEO of Tropicana Corp Group. So be sure to stay tuned for that after the news bulletin, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.